Welcome to Inspired to Heal, where I interview innovators, educators, clinicians, and leaders in government-run health institutions. Season 1 focuses on former staff at Cook County Hospital, Chicago's safety net health system. I'm Bill Trick, your host for Inspired to Heal. Today, you'll hear from an emergency department physician working in one of the busiest emergency departments in the United States, one that was made famous by the award-winning television show ER. I interview Dr. Jeff Shader. Jeff worked in Cook County Hospital's emergency department for close to 3 decades, eventually becoming the chair of the department. He always exuded energy and positivity. Jeff, thanks for joining me on Inspired to Heal.
It's a pleasure, Bill. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Can you tell us your inspirations to choose medicine as a career? What made you decide you wanted to be a doctor?
I think mine goes back a long way before most people's. It was called the 6-year med program at Northwestern. So I actually decided to go into medicine during my essentially 3rd year in high school. I think realistically, I had no idea what I wanted to do, but it seemed to fit with my interest of working with people and science. I applied for the program at Northwestern, and essentially you spend 2 years in the undergraduate campus, then 4 years in the medical school, and you're essentially guaranteed admission to the medical school as a high school student, so it was a fantastic deal from just a medical school admission process. I probably wasn't 100% certain at the time, but it actually turned out very well in the end.
Mm-hmm. And is that something you advise for other people?
You know, I'm a big proponent of it. I always was a little bit jealous of the folks that maybe spent 2 or 3 years between undergraduate and medical school doing something else. I think it enlivened their life a little bit. I had the opportunity to go to France for a year in between. So I did my junior year abroad in Paris, which was fantastic. I would advise people to do it. I think the programs are becoming less numerous. Northwestern does not have their program anymore at this point in time. Just try to get as many alternative experiences as you can during that time to broaden your mind and your overall views towards life before you dive into medicine.
Mm-hmm. What is your favorite memory of being in France?
Oh my God. In the early 80s, it was really French. Nobody spoke English. We used to go out late at night on the weekends, and the subways would stop running at about 12:30 at night. So we would often walk from where we were home. It would take like an hour and a half through the streets of Paris with the lights shimmering off the streets. It was very, very quiet, and just walking and seeing all the beautiful architecture, monuments and such. You know, walking along, you know, through the streets of Paris with your friends in the middle of the night was, to me, is still a memory that I'll cherish forever.
Mm-hmm. And since your retirement, you've traveled a lot. Have you been back?
I was just in Paris probably 3 weeks ago or so. Was had the opportunity to go to the rehab Notre Dame Cathedral, which is I thought was absolutely spectacular. Definitely worth visiting if you're heading back that way at any time soon. Just to compare that to what it looked like before the fire, it's really just it was a remarkable feat of engineering, and it was really, really spectacular.
Mm-hmm. Do you prefer Paris as a poor student or as a relatively affluent, retired?
That's an excellent question. I'd rather be young with money, but I'd rather be old with money than young with no money. Let's just say that.
Okay. I suspect you're eating a little different than you did in
1980. Exactly. Literally, we weren't eating before. Now you could have some fantastic meals and really just enjoy the city and just do some spectacular things, which is nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. It's an interesting question, Bill.
You ended up choosing Cook County, and Jack Rabe actually went to Northwestern as well and said when he chose Cook County, they looked at him like, why are you ruining your career? What made you choose Cook County, and did you meet similar responses?
Yeah, for me, it was a little bit different. Back in the mid-80s or so when I decided in emergency medicine, it was a very new specialty at that point in time. So there weren't that many programs around the country. And a lot of people felt that emergency medicine was kind of a waste of your career in some respects because it was new. A lot of emergency departments were staffed by non-emergency physicians. They didn't really understand the need for emergency physicians to staff these places. I ended up doing my residency out in Denver at a public hospital in Denver called Denver General. Now it's called Denver Health, which was a spectacular experience from just I had phenomenal mentors there that were there. The attending physicians were fantastic. And the patients we saw were incredibly nice, interesting, and I got great clinical experience there. So after residency, I was going to move back to Chicago, and Denver at the time was one of the top programs in the country. I probably could have gone anywhere in the country. I interviewed out in California, but I wanted to come back to Chicago where I was from. And the only type of hospital I wanted to work at that point in time was a public hospital. So I was only looking at public hospitals across the country. So Cook County was the only choice that I had in Chicago. Right when I was coming back to Cook County, it was just, I don't know if it's luck or unluck, but our emergency medicine program had just started a year previously. So beginning in 1988, our first class of residents came in. I started in 1989. So I relished the opportunity to help essentially found and formulate the program over the years and work closely with the residents in the teaching hospital and really try to essentially get the emergency department in a functional state and the program into a top program for the country. When I first arrived in the 80s, Cook County was a pretty dysfunctional place from a physician perspective and just an overall care perspective, I think, compared to what it is right now.
Mm-hmm. I remember when you retired giving a talk and commenting that when you first started, you would end every shift with a headache.
It probably started halfway through the shift. So imagine this. The emergency department when I first arrived in 1989, number one, was not air conditioned. In the summer, it's pretty hot down there. Number two, we had probably, I think, a total of 12 attending physicians at the time. So our coverage was very bare bones. So we would have one attending physician covering the whole emergency department, like Wednesday night, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday and Sunday nights. So if you're the attending physician working, say, a Friday night shift, you might actually be responsible for 100 patients during 8 hours, which is 12 patients an hour. You're running around like crazy, making fairly important decisions. It really was a big stress as far as trying to make the right decisions with minimal information and really sort of hold the fort down. What was good about that is as a young attendee with a lot of energy, you learned a tremendous amount. The more patients you see, the more you learn. So I really developed my clinical skills greatly over the first couple of years, but it probably took me a year to get to the point where I felt comfortable on those shifts, making all those decisions in a rapid basis with very limited information, and then supervising probably 8 to 10 residents and maybe a multitude of medical students at the same time during those shifts. As you can imagine, the shifts went by very, very quickly, but they were fairly stressful. I think once you understood and were able to handle the load, then the stress level decreased. And after about a year or so, I think I stopped having headaches during the shifts and started having a lot more fun during the shifts. Yeah. And what I found is that as our staffing improved and as our residency improved and as the hospital improved as far as a lot of the efficiencies go in the electronic medical record, a lot of electronic x-rays and things like that, the shifts actually became quite easy. And I think it became easy for me because I had all that time in my first couple of years really honing my skills as a physician. Once you had all the tools in your hand, all of a sudden life became a lot easier during the shifts. And those were probably the least stressful times of my career was working in the ER compared to all of my administrative activities that I'd done in the hospital the last 10 to 15 years of my career there.
If I remember correctly, when you presented to us, you said, I think the head of the emergency department might have been Dr. Simon at the time, and you commented about the headaches to him.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, and you said, does it get better? And he said, no, it doesn't get any better, but you get kind of used to it.
Right. And actually, it was funny. One of my colleagues, Isam Nasser, who was one of our residents who joined our staff after he finished residency, after he'd been there for a couple of years, he had headaches at the same time when he first started. And one time he said to me, I've been having headaches, after my show. I said, well, Isam, I had them from my first year. Don't worry about it. And he said that after I told him that, his headaches went away completely, which is interesting. So I think a lot of people experience the stress of emergency medicine when they first finish because the clinical time is a little more stressful than a lot of other professions, obviously, which I enjoyed. But you have to understand what you're getting into and essentially adjust to the pace and the decision-making.
Toward the end of your career, as you had a lot of experience, were there any patients or conditions that would come in that you had a fear of, or did you feel like nothing really phased you? Or
I think very little things phased me as time went on. I think in the back of most emergency physicians' minds, one thing that Cook County always produced, I think, is the most difficult airways of any emergency department. And the reason for that, from
just to clarify, medicine, Jeff, for people who aren't doctors,
what I'm talking about is when someone comes in severe respiratory distress, they can't breathe. You have to put a tube down into their trachea. In general, you'll have seconds to decide and then seconds to actually do it so that they'll have a good outcome. These are very tough decisions to make. I found the airways that I had to actually manage in our emergency department, in our trauma unit as well, when I was doing my trauma shifts, were the among the most difficult you'd ever experienced in your career, just for a multitude of reasons. Number one is that our patients were usually very sick. A lot of our patients, number two, were a little more obese than in your average patient. So that makes the airway much more difficult as well. And number three is when you're the attending physician in a teaching hospital, the resident physicians generally attempt the airways first. So if they get it right away, that means an easy airway. If they don't get it right away, they've tried a couple of times already. By the time you go in there and try, oftentimes the anatomy is a little bit distorted because they've been attempting number one. And number two, you have a little less time to actually put the endotracheal tube in just because the patient has not been breathing for that many more seconds. So the pressure is quite high, I think, for the attending physicians in those situations. So that's one thing that was always in the back of my mind. And we often did a lot of simulation sessions for our residents and training for our residents. I always made a point of actually trying to teach those because I wanted to keep my airway skills as up-to-date as possible to really handle those real difficult airways.
Did you find that it does a pretty good job in preparing you for those difficult intubations, or was it just too easy to really equate to what you experienced?
Number one, it was probably too easy, but what I thought was very helpful for was using alternative airway devices. So there we have a lot of the fiber optic devices that we have now, which I didn't have when I trained. So it's actually good to feel comfortable to how to use those, because that's a really a different way that you can, you know, essentially access the airway in very difficult anatomy situations. I think you're right. We would try to make the mannequins difficult to intubate, but nothing compares to someone who has just vomited all over the place or has blood in that area too, in order to actually try and intubate those types of patients. You cannot simulate that. And obviously the stress as well that you might encounter with a mannequin is nothing compared to obviously with a live patient.
Mm-hmm. I probably should apologize for taking you down this if you have PTSD or if you start getting a headache while we speak.
No, actually, I'm good. I will tell you, Bill, I had zero bad outcomes from any airways. So I actually feel very good about that during my 30 plus years of career. So that actually, I think you might be stressful for it, but actually all the great outcomes. I remember, you know, one time one of our residents, senior residents, could not intubate a patient. And he's like, I can't see anything. So I remember when I was a resident many, many years ago, one of our senior residents who had done anesthesia beforehand, he had a similar case. And what they did is they squeezed the chest, and he was able to see where the air was coming out of the swollen airway. Mm. And he put the tube right where the air was coming out when he squeezed the chest, because it had no visual confirmation where to put the tube. I used that when I intubated the patient after he could not see the airway. And he looked at me like, how did you get that done? But, you know, all little tips and things you learn along the way help you as you get older in order to really manage the most difficult situations. So I think I was fortunate to have so many difficult situations, you know, over the years that I felt fairly comfortable, even towards the end of my career, which I thought was very nice.
Yeah. But with such a good streak without a bad outcome, the last couple of months, you must have been anxious that, oh boy, you know, can I make it two more months? And
I actually never really thought about it that way, but I think I probably should have thought more that way, but it actually things turned out quite well in the end. And I still volunteered for the first couple of years afterwards. I never really felt any thoughts or pressure from that perspective. I probably should have actually, Bill, but I didn't, which is nice.
Well, that's quite a trick someone with experience had. And it's just, if you know, people can imagine, that sounds extremely difficult. It feels like a nearly impossible skill, but clearly.
Yeah, you can imagine you look down in the back of the throat and you see nothing but tissue. And you're just trying to figure out the anatomy because it's so swollen for whatever reason. And then you just see where the air bulb comes from and just try to put the tube through there. It's one of these little tricks that you hardly ever have to use, but you want to have in your pocket, obviously.
A little known fact, or maybe it isn't that little known, but I know that you were a soccer player during college.
That I was, exactly. Very good. You have a very good memory, Bill. I appreciate that.
Did that soccer training prepare you in any way for the emergency department?
Well, I think most emergency physicians have to be physically fit. A 12-hour shift in the county ER was a long time to be on your feet and run around like crazy. It did prepare you, number one, from a fitness perspective and a teamwork perspective as well. So I think being on the soccer field did help, although you need a little more than just good footwork to do well in the emergency department.
Yeah, right. Well, I certainly expected teamwork, because when I would admit patients to the ward, I would come down and would always be impressed by how calm people were in very difficult circumstances, how available the physicians were to someone like me coming down to ask a question about a patient. But just the magnitude of sensory inputs that you're receiving, including that alarm that would go off when an ambulance call would come in.
Yeah.
And you would have to drop what you were doing and take the call and advise the EMTs as they're coming in.
Yeah, the amount of interruptions and multitasking in the emergency department is probably unparalleled because you have essentially no control of your environment in some respects. And often you're being interrupted with more critical things than the previous critical thing. You have to decide between them. I found it extremely stimulating, and I enjoyed that tremendously, actually. In fact, I worked a lot of Friday evening, Friday night shifts, and I would always prefer to be in the ER than going to a party with my wife or whatever, as a cocktail party or something, because it's much more interesting being in the ER on Friday evening than any party you could bring me to, quite frankly. I mean, as far as the conversations, the stories, the amount of people you meet, it's unparalleled from that perspective, which I really enjoyed.
So if I ever want to socially engage with you, it's let's go do a shift in the ER, not, why don't we have some drinks?
Exactly. I don't drink much anyhow, but I'm telling you, Bill, just 8 hours in the ER with people you're helping, taking care of, you meet people from all over the world, speak different languages, you're working with great people. It's unmatched. Obviously, as a medical student, you spend time in the operating room, which is great, but you're sort of cloistered in a small space. But again, you're not being exposed to the police bringing in unruly patients, all the paramedics, the fire department, bringing people in by the stretcher. You have a pulse in the city when you're working those shifts. It's actually a very satisfying, very interesting career from that perspective.
You probably got to know the first responders, police and the paramedics, pretty well.
Oh, yeah. The different ambulance numbers, we'd have this ambulance 45 would often come to Cook County because just where they're physically located in the city. And you get to know the paramedics right away because sometimes they'll bring you 6 patients during a shift. They get to know the nurse as well. And they feel comfortable coming to our emergency department. And we like them to come to the emergency department because I think we take very good care of the patients. So we welcome them and really want to make sure that they do a good job in the pre-hospital phase so we could transition well to the hospital phase. And the police, I have a lot of respect for the police as well. They brought in some very difficult patients to us, patients that were homicidal or suicidal, and they would have to restrain them. Sometimes they would bring them in and they would have like 6 or 8 policemen with one patient. So I always admired those guys trying to get these individuals under control because they might have had some psychological issues or some drug-related issues in the streets or in the field. And they bring them to the hospital. We have a much easier time. It's a much more controlled environment. I was always thankful for the job that they did when they brought us a lot of these patients.
Mm-hmm. And many of them actually show quite a bit of restraint under very challenging circumstances.
Oh, yes. I've ridden in ambulances before. But in the ambulances, you're essentially 2 people in one ambulance. You might have some help with a fireman. You really bare bones help in the field and throughout the city. And those are very challenging environments to see patients and work. And it's very interesting, but it's a very, very difficult job as well. And I think people would appreciate if they ever had the chance to do that, because I think they would understand how challenging and how difficult those jobs are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when I asked you about soccer, one of the things I wanted to get to, and I want you to be honest with your answer, Jeff, but one of the things I thought you might have learned was that if you really didn't want to do a shift, you would grab your hamstring and collapse.
It's so interesting because that's men's soccer. The women are much tougher than the men. They don't take those fake falls. But it's interesting actually. I think that the physicians I work with were the toughest group of people you can imagine. One of our attending physicians, I don't want to say her name, but she was pregnant. Went through her whole pregnancy. She was having contractions during her night shift. She finished her shift. And then she went to Northwestern where her OB was, delivered the baby like an hour and a half later. She was 4 centimeters dilated at the end of her shift. Emergency physicians in our department were tough as nails. I don't think I ever missed a shift in 30 plus years for illness. Sick, you just do what you need to do to show up for your shift. People rarely, rarely ever missed a shift, which I thought was amazing, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, good. I'm glad that didn't extend from the soccer field. You probably didn't in soccer either.
Exactly. No. In those days, no.
The emergency room or emergency department at Cook County, became quite famous. And it sounds like not soon after the program was started, long-running, award-winning show was based yep. about Cook County. What interactions did you have?
So it was fascinating almost because I think that really propelled emergency medicine into a very popular, especially among medical students during the course of that show, as you probably know, all the famous people were in it and people started to watch. It's almost like Marcus Welby from our days was a great primary care physician. Mm-hmm. People wanted to become a doctor because of him, but a lot of people wanted to become physicians because of the seeing the show ER. They actually came to a couple of our faculty meetings, some of the writers, to meet with us and talk with us. Interesting, the chairman at the time, my predecessor, Dr. Simon, he, for some reason, did not like Hollywood or any of these types of things. So he was always trying to keep them at arm's length, which I thought was interesting, but and really had a little disdain for the show. But in the end, I think we all realized, and in fact, it did great things for our specialty as far as attracting some of the brightest candidates to pursue their careers in emergency medicine. And so I thought that worked out well. There's some other shows that are on now. There's another show called The Pit I've not seen, but apparently it's a very popular show now that depicts, I think, every hour during a shift of an emergency physician. And some people I've talked with said it's a very realistic and a fairly popular show for people to watch.
Did you or your colleagues ever play the game of assigning famous characters to each other? And if so...
No. But I mean, no, we did not. But obviously, I look like George Clooney, so I'd be the Clooney, as you know. A bald Clooney, let's just say that.
Well, we'll have to Photoshop your headshot. Exactly.
I would appreciate that very much. I'll just send you George Clooney's headshot. No problem.
You've since retired. What do you miss most?
Yeah. Well, I think the reality is you love seeing the patients. You love the pace. You love the teamwork. You love the residents. You love the teaching and stuff like that. That's what I think you miss. On the other hand, I don't miss my responsibility as chairman, where you had to essentially fight with administration about a lot of things in order to make patient care better, protect your department. Those are the difficult parts of my job. What I always told myself when I was a younger emergency physician, I remember I used to moonlight at other emergency departments when I was younger, and occasionally people would come in and work in the emergency department with these physicians who had retired from other ERs and were working in this emergency department where I was working out on the suburbs. And they were a little bit older. They were very slow. And I was thinking, these guys are not very good docs. They're a little bit too old to do this. And I told myself, I said, Jeff, you don't want to be in the position where people look at you and say, that guy should have stopped working 5 years ago. So I think my goal was, and I was lucky with Cook County, the way things worked out, was that I feel like I was able to retire when my clinical skills were still excellent. Because I think emergency medicine is not, number one, you want to have the correct diagnosis, but you also need to move the room because you need to get people into the emergency department from the waiting room as well, because someone who's not been seen could be the sickest patient in the whole department. So I felt good about leaving when I did, in the sense that I still felt that I was a very effective physician and I'll be remembered as such as well.
Mm-hmm. What does the future of emergency medicine look like? Not just the career aspect, but how the practice of emergency medicine, how you anticipate it'll change.
I think the emergency department is like a canary in a coal mine. When things are going well in the healthcare community, the ERs work well. When things are not going well, they don't work as well. For example, if there's funding cuts or whatever it is, if say hospitals have to cut back beds, the backup always occurs in the emergency department. If people lose insurance, then all the uninsured patients tend to come to the emergency department mm-hmm. as well. I always welcome that because in my mind as a chairman, I said, man, if I have a line out the door, that's good for my department. So I always wanted to be as busy as possible. And I kind of liked it when it's busy all the time. But I think one of the big challenges I think will be having adequate resources so that the EDs can function efficiently. I think that's important from a societal perspective, obviously, because both you and I at some point in time will need an emergency department. We want to make sure we can get in there and get out of there as well. From a specialty perspective, people always talk about burnout in the emergency department. I don't know. I think it all depends on how much you work and if you like your job or you don't like your job. Most people that worked with me that I've known, actually, I didn't detect much burnout among any of them, quite frankly. Probably an equivalent burnout to some of my friends that were in other specialties like OBGYN or even some of my internist friends that were in private practice and very busy practices. There's a lot of stress in different aspects of medicine. So I think if you choose your specialty correctly, and if you're well-trained, especially, I think it would mitigate some of the burnout that you might have.
Did you come up with any other solutions for burnout?
Yeah. So I'll tell you, it's very simple. Number one is that essentially a lot of private EDs, you get essentially get paid per hour, an hourly wage. The more you work, the more you make. So I would always tell people, you know, don't buy the boat, don't overextend yourself so you have to work so much. Work as much as you feel comfortable working and happy with, rather than working in order to pay for a larger house or a larger second home or whatever it might be. So, you know, essentially keep your means in line with your income that will allow for a restful time after your shifts and have adequate time between your shifts to recover. Number two, I would always talk to them about essentially having a variety in your career. What's nice about emergency medicine is that usually you're exposed to the whole hospital. So a lot of the emergency physicians can get on hospital-wide committees or move up through academic structures in the dean's office and such because they interact with so many different specialties in the hospital. So you can essentially have part of your career clinical, part of your career administrative, which I think the variety actually does decrease your stress and burnout as well. And the third thing I think is important is what we did is that we had a rule that after you're 50 years old, you wouldn't be having any more overnight shifts in the emergency department. So I think physically it gets very difficult to work an overnight shift after you reach a certain age. The younger guys had to work a little more nights, but when you have the energy, you could do that. But when you get older, you don't have to do it quite as much. I thought that was great as far as just allowing the older folks essentially adequate rest time to be productive in their academic career, in their clinical career, and with their families as well.
Now that you've retired, what is keeping you busy?
I'm still working, Bill. Everyone retired, but they're still working, doing something. So I'm doing some part-time medical editing with Elsevier, which is a large publishing company. I've been doing that since I retired. I'm actually on my third emergency medicine textbook since I retired as well. So I published two of them about a year and a half after I retired, and now we're doing the seventh edition of one of the textbooks that I'm the lead editor on, called the 5-Minute Emergency Medicine Clinical Consult. That's coming to an end right now. And I, quite frankly, I've been traveling quite a bit too, Bill. I've been essentially gone probably 50% of the time out of Chicago. I've not seen a winter here for the past 3 years, so that's been really nice.
That is a great description of how an emergency department physician retires and still has many things going on at the same time.
Right, exactly. No, it's funny. I still have a to-do list. When I was a chairman, I had a to-do list every day. I still have my to-do list that I have as well. And I still have a schedule as well. It sounds crazy, but I'm still, you know, schedule all these things every day.
Mm-hmm. What have I missed that would be worth exploring? Anything about Cook County Hospital, about the patient population?
I think it's talking about the patients is important, Bill. Mm-hmm. You know, just because that's really why we're all there, quite frankly. That's in the mission, I think, is an important aspect of working in the county hospital.
Can you describe to me about working with the patients that ended up coming to Cook County Hospital? It probably was a different slice of America than you were used to. What drew you to that, and then what kind of sustained you?
No, so I think for all of us, I mean, you know, I think when you enter the emergency room at a county hospital, you're out of your comfort zone, unless for some reason you grew up in that community, obviously. And I did not. I grew up in a suburban community in the North Shore of Chicago. And I got lucky enough to actually do my residency at a public hospital in Denver. But coming from Denver to Cook County was like a whole different scene. I mean, when I first started a county, I think probably 85% of our patients had no insurance at all. So you really saw people that really had nowhere else to go. Probably at that time, our demographics, we probably saw about 85% African-American, about 15% a smattering of different ethnicities. Towards the end of my career, I think the Hispanic population had grown quite a bit. And so probably about, you know, 30 or 40% of our patients were Hispanic, probably about 50% African-American, and then had a large Eastern European Polish contingent and some South Asian as well. But for me, at least, I think working at a county hospital, taking care of patients where they have nowhere else to go, really sustains your career. Each shift you work, you feel good about yourself. You feel like you're doing something for someone that really couldn't get care nowhere else. And I think that was always for me when I was chairman. I would meet with all of the resident applicants and would explain to them why it's so important to work at a county hospital. And I think that's why we were able to attract people that really had the mission and the energy and the desire to really care for people that really had nowhere else to go. And we, I think we, at the hospital, we provided excellent care for our patients, you know, compared to other places in the city and across the country. Sometimes it might seem a little bit chaotic, but in fact, the physicians in all the departments were among the best in the city and really provided excellent care. And I think a lot of patients recognize that. So you would often get people that would come to the emergency department that would bypass many other hospitals. They could have stopped at maybe six or seven different hospitals on the way to us. They would often come to us because they know that they would be treated with care, with respect, and with dignity. And then in the end, we would go to bat for them and really try to find out what's wrong with them and make them better.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't take long to realize that despite the circumstances that or the context of where the people grew up in their neighborhoods, it didn't take long to get under the surface and see them as the same as everyone else. So not
of course, not, you know. And everyone has different needs. And I think if you're in a public hospital, you understand the needs of the patients there. And I think, you know, we were able to, people went out of their ways to help them. Remember, like, you know, one of our attendings, Becky Roberts, I saw her, she would always slip $20 to so many patients who couldn't get her way home. Mm. She'd like, you know, she'd just be, you know, essentially helping them to, you know, hey, I need a ride home. Here, take the money. Oh, you have something here. Just take this, go there. She, you know, she'd give her lunch to people at times. People really went out of their way to really try to make the patients' lives better. And I think there's nothing that could compare to that, I think, in any other environment. For me, you know, 30 years is a long time to be at a place, but my God, it went by in a blinking. I would do it all again at the same time. And I'm sure you would as well. And everybody that worked there for so many years, because in fact, they felt this mission and this satisfaction by caring for people.
Mm-hmm. Through this podcast, it makes me want to go back and start again and even do some things differently.
Exactly. I think all of us. Exactly. That's true about life, I guess, in the end. Mm-hmm. That's true. Exactly. And the people, some people you've interviewed are among my heroes, quite frankly, as well, at County. There's amazing physicians there, amazing devotion to patient care. So mm-hmm. people do not come to County for the money. They came there for the patients and the mission, and because they really believed in it. And I think that really attracted such a special group of physicians and ancillary personnel that work there that is unparalleled in a lot of other places.
Right. The nurses in particular, I know, had a lot of pride in being an emergency room nurse.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They worked hard. I mean, the physicians might work, you know, 3 to 4 shifts a week, whatever it might be. A lot of the nurses would work 5 shifts a week, plus they would do overtime. I mean, they would be there a lot. And I had a lot of respect for them. They really worked hard to take care of patients. They're starting IVs on extremely difficult, you know, patients. That, you know, there might be drug abusers that have essentially very bad veins. And I mean, really, they learned so much about so much stuff. And yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Bill. Without good nurses, you can't take care of patients in a place like Cook County. And the ER nurses, I have a tremendous amount of respect for them as well.
So on to my last question. If you could choose one item to put into your doctor's bag, literal or figurative, what would it be?
Well, you know, it's a tough one. I think most people back in the day, they think of a doctor's bag as the black bag where you'd have your hammer, you'd have your stethoscope, you might have your tuning fork and things like that. I think for me at this point in time, the one thing that I would put in my bag would essentially something that would give me the knowledge on how to treat all the different diseases. And I've become fairly tech savvy. So I would make certain that I have my iPhone with all my important apps in there so I could pull up information rapidly about patients in order to actually care for them. So, I think something that allows me to easily access information so I could give the most up-to-date care for the patients and most rapid care for the patients. That's what I would always have in my bag, but I usually carry around in my pocket, obviously.
One other person gave me that response, and it was your classmate, Peter.
Oh, is that right?
Peter Clark.
Interesting, interesting. Yeah, well, there's a good Northwestern education for you.
That's right, yeah. find out the most important resource.
Yeah, exactly. And the reality is we probably couldn't remember it anyhow, because who knows? But no, I think you're absolutely right. I've learned that as being the critical thing. Things are changing so rapidly that it's really nice to, you want to give the best and most up-to-date care. it's hard to remember everything because you can't possibly do that. You just have to be able to learn how to access the resources.
And I might slip some Tylenol in your bag for you.
Exactly. I think the residents were always saying, you have to just get some lithium because I was always so hyper during my shifts. But so if you ask them that question, they'd probably give you a slightly different response.
Yeah. Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you, Jeff. Thank you.
All right. Bill, it's a great pleasure seeing you too. And I look forward to getting together at some point in time.